Thank you for this wonderful new book. I'm thinking how to give a synopsis. It's a little bit of everything. It's a memoir, it's poetry, it's essays, journaling guides. I think somewhere on the book jacket it says survival kit. I think that's kind of a good way to put it. How would you describe it?
Well, I think that, you know, I think the first thing is that, you know, poetry to me is the unexpected utterance of the soul. It's not whether language appears a certain way on a page. And therefore, you know, this book, which gathers 28 years of my inquiry and learning about suffering and wholeness and healing, anything that speaks to the true poetry of life really demands any form that can help bring it into view. And so I view all the genres as just tools in a toolkit. And so there are times I need to, there's a lot of poetry, but there's questions that I offer to the reader through journaling, as you know, and there are essays which explore deeper themes, which is more like walking along a river and stopping to take notes and have conversations. So whatever can help, whether it's stories, whether it's scholarship, whether it's history, whether it's lyrical poetry, they all belong together if they all serve the one truth of the mystery of life.
You know, it occurs to me that, and maybe more in our culture here than in others, that we want to avoid pain at all costs. We want to avoid suffering. One of the bigger messages I get from this book is you're telling us don't try to run away from it. Embrace it. Walk through it.
Well, yeah, and you know, because it's totally understandable from the beginning of time that no one likes suffering. No one likes pain or fear or worry,
right?
You know, but having been through what I've been through and having cancer many years ago and almost dying and still being blessed to be here, it's changed my way of seeing life in the world. And I really feel that in the way that we can't avoid, as much as it's understandable, it's the friction of life. We can't avoid it. And we actually, the Buddhists like to say that when we try to avoid our pain, we double it.
Mm.
And that's what the Buddhists call suffering. It's like they actually speak about it as, you know, when we try out of our fear or worry or pain to stop the wheel of life from turning, we double our pain and fear and worrying. And this is impossible. It's like an ant trying to stop the earth from turning on its axis.
Right.
And so with compassion, we need to understand how difficult it is to face, but it's through facing and what is ours to face and working with what we're given that we actually reveal our deeper gifts and our resources and find a way through. So, you know, in nature, we know that everything from rivers to soil to mountains face erosion. It's a natural part of nature. And in fact, many of the ways that nature is eroded, we travel vast distances on vacation to see how beautiful those parts of nature are. Well, likewise, great love and great suffering are the friction of life, and they erode us to our inner beauty if we can hold each other up to being worn away like that. And I don't, you know, I don't deify pain. I don't, you know, it's more like, this is more like spiritual physics. I'm like describing gravity.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happens. And so I think, you know, that whatever you think created life, I think that life has been made just hard enough that we need each other.
Yeah.
To ensure the journey of love.
Do you think that we can learn from happiness, or do we need pain and suffering to learn lessons in life?
No, I think we can absolutely learn from joy and wonder and curiosity and surprise. Absolutely. It doesn't have to be just suffering. And it's interesting, and I mentioned this in one of the essays in the book, that the word to suffer literally means to feel keenly. So we don't have to go very far to see that to know beauty and joy, you have to feel keenly as well. And it's really anything can open us, that every human being will have a chance to be dropped into the depth of life, whether it's through pain or beauty or joy or love or surprise or disappointment. And we will experience all these things because we're human. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the wholeness of life, the unity of life, that is life-giving and healing. So to give you an example, a metaphor that helps me with this, is water. You take a glass of water. Now, we all learn early on in school that water is made out of hydrogen and oxygen. But even if you could, and if I asked you, oh, could I just have the hydrogen, please? Well, even if you could separate it, it would no longer be water, and it would no longer be quenching.
That's a terrific metaphor. That is helpful.
Yeah, because life, the water of life, comes in its wholeness. And, yeah, it's natural that, no, I'd rather have the good things, please. But you can't separate it out. And when we try to, and if we do by any chance, it stops, the water of life stops being quenching.
There was a short piece in the book where you wrote about having to undergo treatment, and also that a technician told you there's a risk of losing your memory and your salivary glands, that you may not be able to taste. And that made me wonder, too, kind of a different way of asking this question that I asked before. Is part of evolving learning what you can give up, or maybe the fear of giving something up, that kind of makes you more keenly aware?
I think part of our journey in life is the difference between what we want and what we're given. Mm. What we want and what we're given often serve two different gods, but how we respond to their meeting determines our path in life. And so, you know, I feel like we are, you know, it's wonderful to have dreams and goals and ambitions. We need that to help us get engaged in the journey of life. But I think that we, at least I know myself, and have looking, you know, back on life, and I think that I'm coming to understand that we hold on to those dreams and goals and ambitions too tightly. I think the real purpose of dreaming is like kindling thrown on the fire of our aliveness. The real purpose of dreams and goals and ambition is to bring our heart alive, to bring us alive, to bring us closer to life. And sometimes they work out, and sometimes they don't. And when they don't, we're asked to learn more deeply the art of acceptance and to work with what we're given. And I'll give you a beautiful story that is so beautiful about working with what we're given. And it's the story of a man in Japan in the 1700s, a young monk called Tetsugen. Now, Tetsugen felt like his call in life was to translate the talks of Buddha into Japanese for the first time. And he had an artist friend who was going to do beautiful woodblock prints for it. And they'd started to translate it and make the woodblock prints. And he went around and began to beg alms to have enough money to publish this beautiful edition of the Dharma Talk. And after about 10 years, all of a sudden there was a flood in Japan where he grew up, which is much like Katrina in America. And so all that he had saved, he gave to the people where he lived to help them repair from the flood. And he continued and went back and tried to beg more money, donations. And finally, after another 8 or 10 years, the same thing happened, except this time it was a famine somewhere else in Japan. And he felt, okay, well, there's still people and they need help. And so he gave them. And finally, after 25 years, he had enough money and he had translated the talks and his friend had done the beautiful wood prints. And they published the first edition. And today, in Kyoto, in a museum, there is one of those first editions under glass. And the plaque says, and this is the important part of the story, the plaque says, in his lifetime, Tetsugen published 3 versions of the holy text, but only one is visible. Mm. And we wouldn't be telling this story if he didn't have the heart and courage to work with what he was given, as opposed to what he wanted.
Yeah, finding that balance.
So often, you know, I think that you know, while our dreams may not come true, sometimes by working toward them, we come true, and that's more important.
Now, a lot of this book is, all of this book is the connection between mind, body, and spirit, and yet it's also a very physical story of a human being dealing with cancer, disease. Talk about how you learned to listen to your body.
Well, I learned that, you know, my job early on is so difficult for anyone going through a life-threatening situation. And so everybody means well, and all the medical people, everybody's trying to help. Everybody is inundating you with things that they don't know. Nobody knows how you're going to do, how long you're going to live.
Yeah.
And so I quickly learned to have loved ones, and I suggest anyone going through something to have friends or loved ones, or even if you don't have friends, ask a stranger to help be kind of your liaison between the outer world and the inner world, to help you gather that information, because I learned that my job was to listen to my body, to listen to my spirit, to bring what was in out to the surface, so I could get the help I needed from the people there. A great example is, you know, I had a rib removed from my back. And in preparation for that, I felt like my job was just to do whatever I could with visualization, prayer, exercise, meditation, everything possible, massage, so that when that surgeon came from the outside and opened up my back, I was from the inside offering up that tumor, so he didn't have to go searching for it, so that it would meet him as soon as he opened me up.
So you're describing a disease, suffering, illness as also very much a spiritual experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, in all the spiritual tradition, none of this minimizes the pain or the difficulty
mm-hmm.
that we go through. All the spiritual traditions have different language, but they speak about wellness as being a lot the part being aligned with the whole, whole, like a fish who swims with the current, has more power than his own little fins. All the traditions speak about disease, which is made of the word dis-ease, as when the part is not aligned with the whole. So we as human beings, we are thrown out of alignment with the powers of life, the forces of life. And a lot of the times, our journey through illness, our journey through obstacle, our journey through problems and difficulty are to jar us back in alignment with the wonder of life.
Now, it seems to me that, and this is a very welcome change in healthcare, that we're starting to finally understand, or maybe it's more coming full circle from what we used to understand and forgot about that mind-body-spirit connection, and allowing the patient to participate in his or her own healing. It used to be that we went to the doctor and kind of handed ourselves over and do with me what you will. You're describing a very active participation, that you're a partner with that healthcare team.
Absolutely. And not only is that necessary for the medicine of healing, but it's also necessary so that the patient feels like they're contributing to their own wellness. You know, when I went through so many different doctors, and I had a rare form of lymphoma, and I had to go to New York City, and I had very skilled diagnostic physicians to help identify what was actually going on in me, but they were horrible caregivers.
Mm.
They were brilliant of mind, but they were bereft of care, and not that they didn't mean well. And so my first chemo treatment was horribly botched, and it was very difficult. And after that point, I had an intuition where I listened to my body, and I knew that I was done with male doc, and I sought out a female oncologist. And then I was living in Albany, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first met her, the first thing she did she listened to my story. Then she reached over. She took my hand. She said, "You're the only person that's on site. Help us help you. Tell us what's going on in there."
Hmm. Yeah, that sounds very wise. A bedside manner and skill with technology, with surgical, it's not all the same thing.
And I also had another angel in my journey was a neurosurgeon at Albany Med Center, who early on, when it was unclear what was happening in this tumor that was growing on my brain. I was hours from a craniotomy, which was brain surgery, and he had done hundreds of these, and I knew that the tumor was fluctuating. It wasn't standing. It wasn't staying the same, and no one would believe me but him. And he came in at the last minute, literally like at the 11th hour, and I was supposed to be operated at 6 in the morning. And he said, I've done hundreds of these, but he said, I don't know what's going on here, and so I want to wait, and I want to bring in a specialist to do one more test. And so he unhooked me and sent me home for a week. And he, brilliant as he was and skilled as he was as a surgeon, how he helped save my life that day was by not doing it. And by admitting that he didn't know, he was secure enough to say, I don't know, so let's wait.
And then you talk a great deal in the book also about how essential connection is, and you've mentioned it already a little bit here, the power of connection both with yourself and with others, and that primarily you give as an example AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, that that's basically why they've been so successful. It's not that they offer some magic pill or treatment. It's basically just people not being alone with their issues, addictions, problems.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I believe that relationship is medicine. And relationship, and it doesn't mean, you know, relationship is real. It's messy. It doesn't mean we're always wonderful and nice to each other.
Right.
You know, it's real. But connection in the world, in nature, is what holds things together. You know, Rumi has beautiful poem, and in it he talks about how if you take reeds by themselves, they're nothing. But if you braid them and you put them together, you create walls and you create a room in which people can live. And he said, just like that, God gave us friendship. And that it is healing not to be alone in the vacuum. And of course, the challenge of relationship is to be who we are and stay connected. We have a tendency in our world, and this is not just our age, it's always been part of the human journey. The challenge is that in order to belong, I will give myself away. Mm. And in order to be who I am, I will in the extreme cut off everything because I feel, well, if I'm going to have to give myself away, then I'm going to be who I am, and I'll just cut all connection. And I think the challenge is to be who we are everywhere, to be who we are and stay in relationship, and that those extremes, which we all experience, are a part of the apprenticeship of how to be a full being while we're here on Earth. And so, you know, one of the biggest things, and I talk about this in the book in a piece called Love Suffering, where, you know, one of the biggest lessons for me was it became clear as I went through 3 years to the heat of my journey. And the people who were caring for me in my life, you know, they were tired. They loved me, but they were exhausted. You know, I could see it one day in the eyes of a friend who was driving me to yet another appointment. And I just, you know, in that moment, I took the risk and I said, you know, I know you love me, but this has got to be hard for you. And they didn't want to admit it. And I said, it's okay. I can see it, you know. And they said, yeah, I'm really exhausted. I said, it's okay. And then what that did was it allowed me to be there for them. Mm. And then we helped each other. And it didn't mean that they were letting me down or they didn't love me. It actually allowed us to be closer because this was another way I could participate in my own team of healing. Was they were taking care of me outwardly, and I could take care of them inwardly.
It's that giving and taking. We all need to, at times, be givers and at times be takers. So disease, as you've just illustrated, it can drive us to madness sometimes, a lack of patience, maybe just because we're physically tired. But kindness can be so important and giving comfort. How do we remember how to be kind?
Well, I think it starts with an open heart. You know, I think it starts with honesty and an open heart and humility to say, I mean, often what we do, all of us, in our fear of what people we love are going through, we'll remove ourselves. We'll say, I can't deal with this. It's too much. So I'm going to back away. When I think what happens, I know I've experienced, both being a patient and a friend or a partner, is somehow being shaken up enough to say, you know, I don't, this scares me. I've never been here before, but I'm not going anywhere. I don't know how to help, but I'm here.
Yeah.
And then again, then we can go through it together. Then as a patient, I can say, you know, I've never been here either, but, you know, but thanks for not running away, and we'll lean on each other. We'll figure it out together.
Yeah.
You know, and I think part of being kind also comes, and this is one of the true, again, I don't advocate suffering. I more observe it like we observe gravity, as I said earlier. You know, this is part of life. And part of life, part of the life of suffering, of going through things, the friction of life, is that once we go through something, it opens our compassion. So we don't have to remember to be kind. We can't help but be kind. You know, once I've been through almost dying from cancer, my heart is forever open to anyone going through a life-changing situation. You know, once we lose a job, we can never be not understanding of someone who has lost a job. You know, I have a poem that speaks about, you know, until we are confused, we don't have any patience for people who hesitate.
Hmm.
Until we fall down, we don't have any patience for how long it takes for someone to get up. And so this is one of the roles of suffering. If we can survive it, I mean, we get it, our share of it, that everybody does. That's just life. But what it does, if we meet and work with what we're given, is that our heart is open. So, you know, I remember years ago, I'm going to be 65 this month, but this is years, maybe 15, 20 years ago. And I don't have a bad back, but, you know, every once in a while you do something and you tweak. Well, the first time that I ever, like, tweaked my back or something, and, like, all of a sudden, oh, my goodness, I couldn't, like, move for, like, a week.
Yeah.
Well, after that, once I got better and I was in the grocery store, and the older woman who took forever to get from the register to the door, and everybody was impatient with her, including me, right, not wanting to admit it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once I hurt my back, I wasn't impatient with her. I went and helped her.
There you go.
Because I understood I said, I know what's going on, because I have already felt that. And so suffering brings us together if we don't run from it.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to make this book sound like it's just for people who are going through cancer. This is a book that can help you really through any major life change or maybe a crisis of another kind.
Well, I think that one of the things that, and this is like we started earlier when we began your question about that we live in a culture that wants to run away from difficult things. Well, the truth is that we're not different from people who are going through difficulty. When we go through, I believe that when people go through difficulty and suffer, they uncover a wisdom that the rest of us need, and that these situations only accentuate what all of us go through in more subtle form in our daily lives. So while the lessons from my journey through suffering and cancer are what caused me to write this book, the lessons are really for everyone, whether you are going through illness or not.
Yeah. Now, you'll be coming to Kalamazoo here soon. Tell us, what can we expect? What will we hear?
Oh, well, yes, I love it. You know, the last 4 or 5 years, every year, I had a publication reading at Kalamazoo College at Stetson Chapel. It's a beautiful place to read and share. And so March 1st at 7 o'clock, I'll be there this year with a publication reading from Inside the Miracle, the new book we've been talking about. And what I love to do with evenings like that is I'll be sharing reading stories and poems from the book and trying to open up a heart space in which we can be together for the evening. And then there'll be a time to have conversation as well once we've, you know, shared some. And of course, there'll be book signing and there at the end as well.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks so much for talking with us, Mark.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, really.